One of the purposes of the practice is that you've developed the skill to think the thoughts you want to think and not think the thoughts you don't want to think. And as we all know, a lot of the meditation is about not thinking thoughts. Things come up as you're trying to focus on the breath, and if they're not related to the breath, you try to put them aside. And if you find yourself wandering off, the Buddha has five major methods for not thinking about those things. One is simply to notice that you wandered off. You've moved to another topic that's not as skillful, so you go back to the topic that's more skillful. And if you notice that you're wandering off because the breath is too weak, well, you strengthen the breath. Or if it's not comfortable, you ask yourself, what can I do to make the breath more comfortable? So you aren't engaged in some thinking as you're staying here. But you also have to fend off a lot of other thoughts. If the distracting thoughts come back again, the Buddha recommends that you think about the drawbacks of thinking them. You can ask yourself, here I am trying to meditate, trying to get the mind to settle down, so why am I thinking about these things? Old issues come up, sometimes from the day, sometimes from years back. And why do you want to go over them again? And if you were to think about them for 24 hours, what would it take? Where would they take you? Anywhere good? Remember the Buddha said, when you allow your mind to go down certain avenues of thought, you're bending the mind in that direction. Do you want your mind to be bent in the direction of lust? Do you want it to be bent in the direction of anger, greed, jealousy? The Buddha's image is of a young woman or young man fond of ornament, looks in the mirror and sees there's a carcass of a dead snake or a dead dog around his or her neck. The disgust that that person would feel. You try to develop that same kind of disgust for the thoughts that would pull you away. That the mind seems to go back to again and again, like a dog rolling over something dead that it's found on the ground. If that method doesn't work, the Buddha says, learn how not to pay any attention to those thoughts. Think of yourself as working on a task, and a crazy person comes along and tries to engage you in conversation. And you know that if you pay any attention to the crazy person, even enough to try to drive the crazy person away, they've got you. So you act as if they're not there. Pay them no mind. And when you don't feed them with your attention, these crazy thoughts will go away. It may take a while, but they'll go away. The fourth method is realizing that when you're thinking a distracting thought, it takes some energy. Where are you exerting the energy to think that thought? You might notice that there's a pattern of tension someplace in the body that corresponds to that thought. Well, breathe through it. And finally, if none of these methods work, then you press your tongue against the top of your mouth. And as the Buddha says, you crush your mind with your mind. In other words, you just will yourself not to think that thought. This is where a rapid-fire meditation word comes in handy, like bhuto, 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 really fast, like a machine gun, until the thought is passed, and then you can go back to one of the other methods, or go back, ideally, to the topic of your meditation. So those are some of the skills in not thinking. But then what about that skill in thinking the thoughts you want to think? Part of it lies in learning how to be more discerning in what you should want to think. Remember that monk who came to see the Buddha one time and asked him, is the world eternal? Is the world not eternal? Is it finite? Is it infinite? Is the soul the same thing as the body? Is it something else? How about an arahant? After the arahant passes away, is he or she existing or non-existing, both or neither? And the Buddha said, you get involved in those questions. And it actually gets in the way of the path. In other words, it's not simply a distraction, but it's actually an obstacle. He made the comparison with a person shot by an arrow. who goes to the doctor, but then he says, before the doctor pulls out the arrow, he says, before you pull it out, I want to know who shot the arrow, what the arrow was made of, what feathers it was made of, what wood it was made of. And if he insisted on that, he'd die first. In the same way, you're suffering. Questions having to do with anything aside from the question of how to stop suffering. At best, they're simply a waste of time. At worst, they get you involved in all kinds of issues that get in the way of the path. So you have to learn how to think. Which thoughts are worth thinking about, which doubts are worth looking into, which ones are worth saying, putting aside for the time being. As the Buddha points out, there are a lot of questions that fascinate us. So, do I exist? Do I not exist? When am I? Who am I? He calls those questions of inappropriate attention. And you might say, well, I can wait until after the problem of suffering is solved. Then I'll come back to those questions. But then he says, once you've solved the problem of suffering, you realize that those questions hold no interest for you. So there's that one category, huge category, questions that are really irrelevant to the problem. And you just have to tell yourself, those are getting in the way. However, there are other areas where your doubts are legitimate. Doubts about the practice, doubts about your ability to do the practice. And here the Buddha gives you some guidelines. There's a passage where he talks about how you can starve your doubts by applying appropriate attention to the question of what's skillful, what's not skillful, and observing your mind, seeing when a certain quality comes up in the mind, does it lead in the direction of suffering or does it lead in the other direction? In other words, you don't just try to deny the doubt, you don't try to snuff it out with a lot of stillness. The doubt is there. And if it's related to the path, you've got to resolve it to at least some extent. And the best way to resolve the doubts is not just to reason things through, although that helps. But as the Buddha said, it's not a guarantee that something is true simply because it's reasonable. It would have been interesting to hear a conversation between him and Kant, because Kant's idea was that reality has to be reasonable. Therefore, anything that doesn't fit into what Kant thought was reasonable couldn't be real. But not everything that seems reasonable is actually true. So the best way to test the truth of something the Buddha said, once you've decided that it does make sense, is to actually try to develop what he says are skillful qualities in the mind and to abandon unskillful qualities. Anything that he identifies as skillful, say, for the time being, I'm not going to go there. Anything he identifies as unskillful, anything he identifies as skillful, give it a try. That's an empirical proof. And he gives different standards throughout the canon. For the Gaudamas, it's pretty simple. Any teaching, any mind state that would lead you to get involved in greed, aversion, and delusion, and get you to break the precepts, you've got to say no. When he was talking to his stepmother, Mahapajapati Gotami, he went into more detail. Anything that leads to passion, getting fettered, entanglement, being burdensome, that leads to holding on to things that you should be shedding, leads you to lack of effort, lack of contentment. Those things you said you've got to abandon. Any mental quality that leads in the other direction, okay, you develop that. So those are empirical proofs. So you can see, if I develop these qualities in the mind, do they get the desired results? There are other issues that are related to the question of suffering, but you can't really resolve them until you've had your first taste of awakening. A lot of them are pretty basic. Is karma for real? Do my mental actions really have influence over what happens in my life? Those are the kinds of things you can't prove until you've had your taste of the deathless. But in the meantime, you've got to decide. These are the working hypotheses that the Buddha recommends. And are they good hypotheses? This is one kind of pragmatic proof. That if I were to assume rebirth and to assume the importance of karma and to assume the importance of my mental actions in particular, what kind of person would I become? What kind of actions would I get involved in? And you realize that they would induce you to get involved in skillful actions. So it's a wise working hypothesis. There's another set of issues. Is it possible to put an end to becoming? Is it possible that there is something unconditioned that the human mind can know? Again, you can't really know these things until you've committed yourself to the practice. But as the Buddha points out, if you assume that these things are not true, when you don't know, then you cut off the possibility that really could be a true happiness. So why cut off that possibility through your ignorance? It's wiser to leave the possibility open. There are good people who say that these things are true. And if you accept that as a working hypothesis, at the very least you leave the possibility open. You're not shutting the door on yourself. That's a second kind of pragmatic proof. So the Buddha gives you standards not only for learning how not to think thoughts, but also what kinds of thoughts are useful. What ways of thinking are useful, what ways of overcoming your doubts actually can overcome your doubts. Not by snuffing them out, but by actually learning. Because that's the only thing that's going to resolve doubt, is discernment. And the kind of discernment that leads to release, then you know for sure what the Buddha taught was true. Until then, you have to go on working hypotheses. So choose the ones that are wise. Learn how to think in the ways that the Buddha recommends. As I said the other day, it's like learning the scientific method. Anything that passes the test of the method qualifies as a useful knowledge, valid knowledge. Anything that doesn't pass the test, you can put it aside. Now, the scientific method works with material things. The Buddha gives you a method for sorting out the truths of the mind, overcoming doubts about your own mind, and the power of the mind to find happiness. Because that is the big issue. The question about whether the world is eternal or not, that's not really a big issue. The big issue is, can you find true happiness? And if so, how? If you have doubts about that, you've got to resolve them at least to the point where you can say, okay, I'll give the Buddhist teachings a try. So when you keep this principle in mind, there are certain thoughts that are good not to think and other thoughts that are good to think. That clears up a lot of confusion.